Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO, and today it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Denise Mina. She has a new novel out, and it has one of the greatest titles I have seen in years. It's called The End of the Wasp Season. She joins us by telephone from beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to America.
Hi, thank you.
You just got in, I understand.
I did. I got in last night, and so I woke up at 4 this morning and went for a run, which sounds, you know, very go-ahead and glamorous, but I'm actually very bad at running, but very vigorous. So it's a nice way to see a town that you don't know very well.
Some of our listeners out here in the heartland of America are probably saying, she doesn't sound like she's from around here.
I'm actually not from Phoenix. No, I'm from Glasgow in Scotland, in the UK.
And that's where you grew up?
Actually, my parents are from there, but we grew up all over Europe because my dad was an oil engineer. So we lived in Paris and Amsterdam and Norway and London. And I have a Scottish accent kind of by default. And I didn't know Scotland very well, but I went back to Glasgow when I was 19 because I ran out of money in Ireland. And I just fell in love with it, and I've lived there ever since. But I sound as if I grew up there and lived there all my life. But I didn't really know the city at all until I went back.
I have been enjoying your books for a number of years, and I just absolutely loved some of these books you put out over the last several years. The books that were about this wonderful journalist and how she became a journalist and got her whole body image thing going. And I thought, well, is she going to keep doing this series? Is that finished? Is it done? Are you going to...
No, there's another two Paddy Meehan books in the series. But what happened was I left off after 3 to go and write another series because I moved publishers in the UK. And they wanted to buy the backlist. And so I said, okay, I'll do something else just now. And I'm so glad I did because of all this Rupert Murdoch stuff. Because I would have finished the Paddy Meehan series now. And then all this stuff's come out, which is just, I mean, I don't know if you've been hearing about it in the States, but it's so interesting. They've been bugging everyone's phones. Murdoch's been having dinner with the Prime Minister 3 days a week. It's an absolute fascinating story. And so I'm going back to the Paddy books probably next year, and there are another two in the series. So there's 5 altogether.
We have been hearing about Rupert, and I'm wondering why that is so important to you. Is it because your publisher over there is Rupert?
It's just a fascinating story, and I think what's really interesting about the press is over here you're like a generation ahead, and the mainstream press are very serious, and they're all from the same kind of educated university background. But over in Britain, it's like the Wild West in the press. You know, they publish pictures of people's underwear. Everything is the National Enquirer with like business pages, and everything's about sex. And what's really fascinating about it is they all have this kind of deviant identity. Like, they 30 years ago they were breaking into people's houses and running each other over in cars to get stories, and then suddenly they become part of the establishment and they're being held to account for their behaviour. And they were never held to account for their behaviour before because they were so out there that the normal rules just didn't apply to them. And it was all led by profit motive. I mean, it's every big issue that's in the papers at the moment. It's just a fascinating story.
Okay. Well, we do have what we call tabloid journalism over here, but I know what you're talking about. In fact, we had Kate Atkinson on the program a while back, and she mentioned how she doesn't do interviews in the UK because they always – want to talk about things that aren't related to the book. They want to know what she's wearing and this kind of thing. And I was flabbergasted because that would never even occur to me.
What, people wouldn't ask what she was wearing?
Well, I wouldn't.
I'll do any interview because the people who interview you are so interesting. thing, but Kate's a different person than me.
Okay.
I love Kate. She's very serious. But, you know, I mean, I've had journalists say to me, you know, because they know that I'm really interested in what they do and they know I know the score. I've had journalists say to me, we're going to tell this lie about you. Is that all right? Are you going to contradict us? I would say, no, if it's a good story, tell the story. You know?
Okay.
I don't mind.
Well, Denise Mina has joined us, and we're going to get around to talking about her book here in a second. It's called The End of the Wasp Season. I heard a rumor that you started out as a lawyer.
I did a law degree, and my family are all lawyers. I come from a big extended family in Glasgow, and I was going to go into law, and then I realised that, you know, this was no place to sort of start the revolution, really. I was going to end up wearing bad suits and listening to people lie to me all day, and you know, really bleeding heart liberal, not suited for that at all. So I went into academia. I was doing a PhD in the differential rates of mental illness ascription to female offenders and male offenders. And while I was doing it, I wrote my first novel, which was Garnet Hill, and then I dropped out and became a writer.
And that became a trilogy.
That became a trilogy of three books, and then I wrote a standalone called Deception, and then I started the Paddy Meehan series, and that's three, and there's another two to come, and then I wrote the Alex Morrow series as well.
And I have read those Paddies. Was it Slip of the Knife, The Dead Hour, Field of Blood?
Yeah,
okay.
And Field of Blood was recently made into a BBC TV series, and it just went out a couple of months ago.
And now this one, The End of the Wasp Season, is this the second Alex Morrow?
It is. It's the second Alex Morrow book, yeah.
And the first one, is that the one where we had the home invasion?
The first one is the home invasion of a big Asian Glaswegian family, and they take the dad hostage, and that was called Still Midnight.
And Alex, this is really a fascinating character. She kind of comes from the wrong side of the tracks, doesn't she?
Well, she does. Her brother, she's from one of those chaotic families with a father with lots of kids. And her half-brother is a gangster in Glasgow, and they're both successful in their way. But she's very ashamed of her background and tries to cover it up. And she's a police officer almost in response to her brother being a gangster. So she's on one side of the line and he's on the other. But, you know, I didn't really want those books to be about Alex particularly. I really wanted the Alex Morrow books to be a holistic look at crime. So you meet you follow the guys who have done the crime and the victims and the police officers, but I think it's hard to conceive of crime fiction as not being about a central protagonist. And so that's why so much focus is on Alex. But I really wanted it to be a rounded look at a crime rather than a single point of view.
Well, when I saw this book and I looked at the title, I said, I can't wait to find out where this title is revealed in the story, because it creates this sense of ominous, buzzing decay, just the title. And I'm wondering, how did you come up with that?
Well, in Scotland, I don't know what it's like in Ohio, but in Scotland, at the end of the wasp season, the wasps all climb into the house. So you find dying wasps all over your house, and they're everywhere, and they're reckless. And it happens every year, and that's when people find out they have wasps' nests everywhere. And it was really about the financial collapse, I think it was Warren Buffett said, it's only when the water goes down you can find out who's swimming nude. And it's just about something that's always there and is quite ominous, and it suddenly becomes revealed. And also about it being cyclical. That, you know, this is not a single fluke event, that this is part of a cycle of behavior that we go through, and we always forget that there's an end to the bubble.
I'm a little reluctant to give much away about the plot. How much do you want to reveal about the central elements of what drives this story?
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah.
Well, a woman is killed in her house, and it's a big mansion house, and which is kind of falling apart, and she's killed by two boys. And one of the boys you meet very soon afterwards, and it kind of follows him through, and you find out why he did this and what it was about and how meaningless it was. And it's really a young man trying to make sense of being at the centre of that financial collapse and all of those lies kind of falling apart.
And his father is Lars.
His father is a prominent banker, and I think it's just starting to happen over here, but the collapse became really personalised in Britain, and people were camping outside prominent bankers' houses and writing on the walls and setting fire to things and throwing them over the walls. And I was thinking about the kids in those houses and, you know, how it would be if that was your dad, and how adolescence is really sort of, you know, falling out of love with your parents and moving off and making your own space, and how that would be if you're, if the people you're pushing off from were really loathed public figures.
Mm.
So that's kind of what it's about.
And this is, this family of Lars, this is the most screwed up family.
I think all families are screwed up when you look close enough.
Oh, man. That note he leaves his wife, that's just about the most repellent thing I think I can imagine.
You know, he leaves a suicide note, which is really abusive, and that's based on, I saw an art exhibition of suicide notes, and it's almost word for word what one of the notes was. And I think that's interesting, because I think we always assume suicide is inherently meaningful, or it sums up someone's life, or it's a full stop, and it's not that. Suicide is an event that happens. And it's maybe somebody at their worst day, or somebody when they're really not well. But, you know, it kind of ennobles a really messed up life. And you know, the suicide note in the exhibition was the guy swearing at his girlfriend and saying, "Who's going to get your cigarettes now?" So I don't think suicide is always the most important thing that anyone has ever done. Sometimes it's just, you know, something that happened, and it happened, they were successful and took their own life. And that was really what that was about. It wasn't really about that character. It was about the fact that suicide isn't as meaningful as we give it credit for. And quite often people, you know, make mistakes and then they get on and live another 30 years afterwards. But it was about what suicide actually means in someone's life.
Denise Mina joins us. Her new novel is The End of the Wasp Season. And you just mentioned a moment ago that you really didn't want to make it about Alex Morrow, but she is investigating, and I think it's good to point out that she's in a rather unique condition. You don't find many investigators in her state.
She's very, very, she's pregnant with twins, and she's 5 months pregnant with twins, and you know, I think the police would probably sack her or move her to a day job, but she won't let them, and so she's lumbering around. And she has this kind of, you know, when you're pregnant, it's a very strange state to be in, and it's not something I see written about very much. People tend to get pregnant and go off and come back with babies. But it's a really kind of magical time. And when I was pregnant, people kept saying to me, "You must be finding it hard to concentrate, or you're kind of loopy because you're pregnant." And I'm sure that's some people's experience. But for me, it was just, I wrote a novel throughout each pregnancy and gave birth the next day, and I was incredibly focused.
Mm.
And I just kind of wanted to write about that, because I think that's, you know, it's not an unusual experience, and very, very happy, because you just feel like you're just full of potential, which is what you are, really.
So were these Patty books that you wrote while you were pregnant?
Yeah, I wrote Field of Blood, and the next day I had my first son, and then I wrote The Dead Hour, and a day after I had my second son.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It is, on all counts.
You knew it was time. The book was finished, huh?
Yeah, well, you just, if you have to, you have to. You know, uh-huh. I mean, I didn't want to be trying to finish it afterwards. So, in fact, I was surprised that they didn't come out with, you know, like Sony Vaio printed backwards on the forehead, because I used to have to rest the laptop on my bump.
So these other Patty books that you have, these are already finished?
Well, no, I haven't written them. They're in my head.
Okay, yeah. So these are planned.
These are planned,
yeah.
And God, I'm desperate to get back to it, because I really miss her.
Yeah, I love that character. She really comes up from just having sort of a copy boy or girl?
She's a copy boy. This is the old way that people, yeah. You didn't do a college degree and go into journalism. You were a runner on the floor, and you had to run backwards and forwards with notes and get everybody tea and stuff. And then you would get to help somebody, and then you would learn how to do this, and you can end up being editor. But they don't really do that system anymore. And so she really started out without an education. And these people were all self-educated, you know, which often means that you mispronounce things all the time, but you know everything about everything. And they were really fascinating people, and they were great at their job. and they knew a story. That was the thing, was they didn't know the facts necessarily, but they knew the story. They could spot a story. So that's the background she comes from, and she comes from a very traditional Catholic West of Scotland background, and she's obsessed with her body, and she's kind of chunky, and she's always, you know, trying different diets and stuff.
And these journalists that she works with, what a classic group.
Yeah, those old rogues.
Yeah, they hang out in the bar.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe the amount of drinking that went on. I worked in the bar where all the journalists drank at that time. And they used to come in and they were like pirates. You know, they could hardly articulate. And then over the course of about 5 years, those guys, I think all their livers exploded at the same time or something. But those guys all disappeared. And a whole lot of other guys came in, and they were young middle class guys in suits who were, you know, they wanted to do serious work. And they would go home at 9 because they'd work in the morning. And the whole business just changed fundamentally over that course of time. I find that fascinating. And, you know, the staff got smaller and smaller, so they weren't digging out good stories for a week. What they were doing was reproducing press releases in the paper and producing an incredible amount of copy every single day. And it changed them. And I think stories are dynamite. The way we tell stories, you know, it can change the world the way we tell stories. And I'm not just talking about people getting facts, you know, but just the form of storytelling in that media has changed fundamentally over the past 20 years. And Paddy's career kind of charts that.
I love the way that Paddy is a journalist, but she's really a sleuth. And she's always getting into situations where she doesn't belong.
Well, you know, I mean, I think the thing about Paddy is she's a girl. She's a chunky girl. She's Catholic and she's not married. She has a kid and she's not married. So she's so used to being the outsider, that doesn't really register for her. And she grew up during, you know, Watergate and all those really those heroic journalists who really uncovered the truth about what was going on. And so that makes her a natural sleuth.
I have fond memories of those days. Denise Mina joins us. Her book is The End of the Wasp Season. And when we get to the end of the book, or at least when I got to the end of the book, I said, okay, I have this all figured out. And then you left me standing there completely confused. And you pulled the old switcheroo.
I love that phrase.
You did.
I did.
Yeah, that was fun. You enjoyed doing that, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
We were all convinced we knew exactly what had happened, and suddenly, boom.
I love that in books, when you know, you're reading to the end and things are getting tied up tidily, and then suddenly the ground shifts underneath you. I love that when that happens in a book, and I'm really glad you felt that way.
Well, that's why I love this kind of book, because you try to figure it out. It's a mystery. And no matter how smart you might think you are, to be thrown at the end, it's like you've had this wonderful ride and you get right up to the gate and suddenly you're thrown over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there writers that you've admired in the past or in the current time that you like to read, or do you write in a vacuum?
Do you know, I read voraciously all the time. I mean, I'll read anything. I read the National Enquirer. I'll read Foucault. I'll read anything. I find it very hard to read other crime writers because I just get so jealous, to be honest, especially at the moment of how talented they are. I feel so inadequate. I like to read dead people because, you know, then at least I know that they've peaked. But I read a lot of nonfiction while I'm writing. And at the moment, I'm reading a book by Caitlin Moran called How to Be a Woman, which is fantastic. I don't even know if it's out in the States. And Robert Fisk's The History of Civilization, because I don't know anything about the history of the Middle East. And it's a brilliant read. It's a really, really good book of essays about Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East.
Is there an Edinburgh and a Glasgow school of crime writing? We've had Ian Rankin on the program on a number of occasions, and I'm wondering, are there schools? These are very different cities.
Well, you know, they're not that different. I mean, I think the thing about Ian and I is we both lived abroad and then came back, and I think that gives you a bit of perspective. I think the whole tartan noir idea that Scottish people write crime fiction and that we're a school of crime fiction, but there are variations, I think there is a real kind of Scottishness about the whole narrative drive, the whole idea that, you know, there's dark and light. But other than that, we're all very different, and I think there are as many schools as there are writers, really. I mean, there are people writing, you know, crime novels set in Glasgow that are based in tennis clubs now. I mean, you know, there's so many different variations. So, you know, I don't think it's an Edinburgh and Glasgow thing necessarily. I think maybe it's a Scottish thing and there are lots of variations within that. But it's great because great books are coming out of Scotland.
Who's writing in a tennis club?
I think Alex Gray set a book in a tennis club.
Okay.
And Karen Campbell was a policewoman and her daddy was a policeman and her husband is a policeman. And she writes great police procedurals. Alan Guthrie writes brilliant books, which are, you know, set in prisons, real kind of traditional pared-down noir. You know, there are lots of different variations on the theme of.
Well, over here, we are fascinated by writers from, do I dare call it the UK? I know to a Scot that maybe isn't a nice term.
Call it the UK. I know, I like that.
Okay.
No, I like it.
It's not just the accents that we like. I can remember the first Scottish writer I interviewed was the late Dorothy Dunnett.
Uh-huh.
And I just loved talking to her, and I was hooked. And just recently we had Philip Kerr on the program. I always thought he was English.
Uh-huh.
And he
says,
I'm from Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
It's like, wow, who knew?
I know.
He says, I had to get out of there.
Yeah, no, fair enough. People from Edinburgh are quite restrained.
He says it's kind of an uptight place, but I've never been.
If you're Glaswegian and you go to Edinburgh, it's like, you know, when you're the drunkest person at the party and you can't stop talking and cracking jokes and no one's laughing. That's what it's like to be a Glaswegian in Edinburgh, because an Edinburgh person laughing at a joke that you've just made is them saying yes really slowly and having a good time.
Oh, my. So you're on a book tour right now?
I'm on a book tour of the US and Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be in Phoenix and in Houston and in San Francisco and in New York and Seattle.
There's a bookstore in Houston that seems to get all the crime writers. Are you going?
You know how they do that? They take you out for dinner. It's McKenna.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they're lovely there, yeah.
So you've been?
I've been a few times, and actually when we lived in Paris and my dad was an oil engineer, we were there with a whole lot of Texans. So our childhood friends were Texans, and when I go to Houston, we meet up.
Oh.
And they always take me to the IHOP, because that's my favorite place.
The International House of Pancakes?
But you don't get them anywhere else, and the food's great. It's very American.
Well, you're starting to sound American talking about it.
Am I?
You're starting to, just slightly, just when you
said
IHOP.
I'm sounding hungry.
You said IHOP.
IHOP.
I wasn't expecting that reference. So how does this work for you? How long ago did you finish this book, The End of the Wasp Season?
God, you know, not long. I mean, just before Christmas last year. So really not that long, like November. So it's quite a fast turnaround compared to how it used to be. And while I'm touring, I'm finishing the next book, which I have another like 3 weeks to do on that, and that'll be out next year. And that's called Gods and Beasts.
And is that a Patty?
That's an Alex Morrow book.
Okay. So that's the third.
That's the third Alex Morrow book,
And we're going to keep going with this series as well?
Yeah, well, you know, the Alex Morrow books are really kind of standalone mysteries with the same character in them, because there isn't that much, you know, character development in it. And I really like her because she's so grouchy. And she's so I really love narky women. And I really admire them. It's very hard to stay narky if you're a woman. And so she will be a recurrent character, and I can't honestly see that series ever ending. But with Paddy, there is a character arc, and I don't really want to go over that because, you know, she has her own trajectory. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I love it when you slip in those terms that to our ears over here we say, like, I'm sure listeners were just now going, narky, what does that mean?
Narky, snipey, what's the Americanism for that? You know, nippy, bad-tempered, you know, people who snap at you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like snappy women.
Testy?
testy.
That's sort of a male term, though. Testy.
Well, you should introduce narky. Narky's gender neutral. You could anybody can be narky.
Narky, I like that. Mm. I know you, there's one part in the book where you use the term wank, and I thought, oh, well, we don't want to talk about that.
Did you look it up in the dictionary?
No, I think I knew. I don't think it means that. I think it means something different here than it does over there.
It means masturbate.
Oh, okay, right. Thank you. Yeah.
Cleared that up.
Yeah, I heard that. Okay.
In case you thought it was anything dirty.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, wait, I need to go back and read that again.
It's also a term of abuse.
Well, there's a term wanker, correct?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
That's sort of a punk
rock. It sounds
rock.
Great in your accent. It sounds better in your accent. And also, to get wankered is to be very drunk.
Okay.
So it's a multi-use term. It's kind of it's like a dash or a blank slate in Scrabble. You can kind of fit it into anything.
I love that. Language is wonderful.
Isn't it beautiful?
It is beautiful. Well, I'm going to really look forward to the next book in this series, and I'm guessing that the other one must have just come out in paperback over here. They don't tell me these things.
End of the Wasp season's just out in hardback, I think.
Okay, and the previous Alex Morrow?
The previous Alex Morrow is out in paperback here.
Okay.
Still Midnight.
And is that on Little Brown as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Reagan Arthur books in Little Brown.
Oh, right, Reagan Arthur. Now, how does that work? Is Reagan Arthur all crime fiction?
Reagan Arthur is, I think, pretty much crime fiction. She is an editor at Little Brown, and she's such a great editor that they gave her own imprint so that booksellers would know that it was a Reagan Arthur book, because everyone was already referring to them as Reagan Arthur books.
I see.
And she's also lovely.
Well, we had George Pelicanos on the other day, and I think he's also under
that. He is, yeah.
Okay. So she is your editor then?
Yes, uh-huh, yeah.
And in the UK, are you on a completely different imprint?
In the UK, it's Orion, and it's a slightly different imprint, but they all work together. So you send your book off to the States, and, for example, Alex Morrow was originally called Alex Minto, and Reagan said, look, you can't call her Minto because that's the name of a suite here, and nobody will be able to take it seriously. So you have to take advice from both sides of the Atlantic.
So it was the name of our candy?
Your candy, you see, it's the name of a small town in Scotland, Minto.
Oh.
But she said over here, you can't, you know, it just has different meanings over here. That's a crazy name over here. It's like calling someone Pullman or Lifesaver.
Gotcha. So does Reagan Arthur actually edit your book, or does someone else do it?
No, usually what happens is you send it off and Reagan and my editor in Britain will edit it together, and the line edit is done in Britain. So they say, you know, this, it flags here, that bit's good, or, you know, we love this character, and then you rewrite the book again.
Well, other than changing the name from Minto, I'm guessing they probably don't play with your stuff too much. I'm guessing they probably say, this is beautiful.
Well, you know, I wish, but they do, and you need fresh eyes, and you have to be, you know, you have to listen to them, otherwise you end up writing a 4,000-page erotic masterpiece. You do have to listen to them, and you do need somebody to tell you that bit's rubbish, and you have to take it on the chin, or you won't get any better.
Well, Denise, it's really been a pleasure.
Vic, it's been lovely talking to you.
Denise Mina has been our guest today. Her new novel is The End of the Wasp Season. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, a superb new novel from Amitav Ghosh. It's called River of Smoke. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.